My point is, there's always something, I think, as a species, we have a desire to believe that we're living at the climax of the story. It's a kind of narcissism. We want to believe that we're uniquely important, that we're living at the end of history, that now, after all these millennia of false alarms, now is finally the worst that it's ever been, that finally we have reached the end of the world.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast of three young professionals that rates and reviews the internet's favorite books to let you know if they're really worth your time. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Today we are going to discuss a newer book by an author who's been really popular for a while. We are going to discuss Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel. So this book is very much a sci-fi book, and it is takes you through several different time periods, like thousands, hundreds and thousands of years apart. And it's really hard to summarize without some spoilers, but the story weaves together through these time periods, and it's interesting how it all ends up coming together. And it all surrounds this image of like a tree with some sounds, and you're very confused for a lot of the book because it's kind of a mystery. Anyway, that was a terrible description, and I don't know how to say anything else without ruining the entire book. So there you have it.
I was about to say, image of a tree. Okay.
I don't know. There's a tree and some whooshing sounds, and it's all very important. Yes, oh, and a violin.
Everything connects. It's all you need to know. And it won't make sense until the very end. But yeah, so do you guys have reviews? Mine is long. So I either want to start or go last.
You go for it, girl.
All right. It's a 1-star review on Goodreads from Charlie. Again, it's long. This was just absolutely dire. I'm such an idiot. I knew I should have been suspicious of all the fawning of you dipshits over Station 11. Just the most thrown together cardboard child's cheese. The author even inserted herself as this god-awful mother hen character. That's what I hate about what seems to be so much of this modern young people's but it's ever so earnest type of genre. It can't just be bad like in the good old days. It has to be bad and you get mollycoddled and treated like an idiot along the way. At least that Blake Couch crap had a fairly robust and interesting SF framework to work around. I'm generally very dubious about dishing out 1-star ratings as it often just feels vengeful and immature. But the fact that this author has such a large and adoring readership made the book's sloppiness and lack of originality all the more irksome.
That review is a little vengeful and immature.
Yeah, I was like, how ironic.
Well, I'm confused about his review, to be completely honest.
Me too. Also, I had to look up Blake Couch. I was like, what? Apparently he's a writer. He has a book called Summer Frost. I've not heard of it or read it, but yeah, I just thought it was really funny to read his like violently immature, vengeful hate that he self-identified accidentally.
Call him as you see him.
Yeah. And I liked the book. I didn't think it was sloppy, so.
Oh.
Well, I have a 4.5-star review from Storygraph, user Lauren Probst, and it's not quite as long. It says, "Don't let the very slow start fool you. Such a good book. Great way to dip your toe into the sci-fi water without diving in headfirst, coming from someone who doesn't love sci-fi. Very well written and thought-provoking."
Yeah.
I like that one. We haven't really done sci-fi on the podcast, so I think it is a good way to dip your toe in. So,
yeah, I'd say it's almost like sci-fi light. Like it's time travel and time, but it's not that like hardcore technology.
Right, it doesn't go so hard into the science descriptions.
Right,
like it's more there, but not, you know, the quantum mechanics of time travel. Right.
There's like space and colonization of planets and things, and like, yeah, but very light. You're right.
Well, I have a 3-star review, so kind of in the middle here, from Goodreads. And this person said, it's exquisitely bland. The story kept enticing me to read on, which is a marvelous skill for any writer to have. But in the end, this novel was an empty calorie kind of read. All You Zombies by Robert Henlon did the story first and better. And I had not heard of that book, and I don't know if they did it better or did it first. You know, maybe I'll try to read it.
Oh, that's sad.
And, you know, I there are points where I agree with it and points where I disagree with it. So I guess that's all like up to interpretation.
That's a high rating for what the words said, you know?
Yeah.
I was specifically searching for 3-star reviews because that's around what my review was.
Right.
And then I found that one and I thought it was interesting because it mentioned other books. And I thought this was very different from other books. So I thought that was a curious thing.
Yeah, so maybe I don't read. I was going to say, maybe I don't read enough sci-fi to know if it's overdone, because I also felt like it was actually a very unique book.
Yeah, I would say, so that we can talk about our star ratings, Goodreads overall review 4.1, Amazon 4.3. I'm kind of like Catherine. I feel like I fell around a 3, but my 3 is far more positive than that person's 3. Like, I don't know. That seemed really negative for a 3, yeah. And I like generally liked the book.
Yeah, I'm in between a 3 and a 4, so I'm probably more like a 3.5. And it was because there were points of slowness and like some of the characters I didn't love that I was focusing on. And how it wrapped up, I wasn't totally sold. Like, I wish it was a more thought out ending almost, or more drawn out. It felt like we had so much lead up for a very fast and loose ending. But I would love to hear y'all's opinion on that.
Yeah, I liked it a little more. I gave it a 4. The slow parts didn't bother me so much. I actually had kind of a wild experience with this book, because the first 10 to 20 pages I actually violently hated. Like, truly, if we weren't reading it for the podcast, I would have DNF'd in the first 10 pages. Like, that's how aggressively I did not like it.
I hated that character that started the book. Yep.
Yes. So boring and pointlessly boring. But that was the only part of the book I really didn't like. After that, you sort of get introduced to this mysterious happenings, mysterious character who you don't understand till later. And that really drew me in. I was really intrigued by the mystery. The ending, I agree, is a little rushed, but I ultimately liked how it ended and I thought it was surprising. Yeah,
the beginning I was reading, I was like, all right, like, why are people liking this book? I do not understand. Then by the end, I was like, wow, that was so unique and masterful.
Yeah. I think the book felt very real and grounded in reality to me. I think that's part of what made it sci-fi light. It was very not fantastical or sensationalized. It felt very realistic, which I liked. But
yeah, it was the only fantastical element was time travel, and the rest of it was very based in reality.
Right. Even, you know, this isn't a spoiler, but it talks about moon colonies for a lot of the books, not just on our moon, but on other planets' moons. And I feel like that's something people generally like agree might happen one day. And also, they weren't like super fantastical moon colonies, like they lived in domes. Like, that made sense.
It was like, I think it's this whole trend now. Like, there's this TV show, The Boys, which is, I actually haven't watched, but everyone tells me to watch it. And it's about superheroes, but it's sort of if superheroes were actual real people and they sort of like behave in realistic ways. It's like this whole new phenomenon of retelling these sci-fi fantasy tropes as if they really actually happened and people behaved in ways they actually would behave. And so that's kind of also how I felt. It's like these rinky dinky little moon colonies that actually aren't as cool as you'd think.
Yeah, they were kind of boring.
Yeah, they were suburbia, literally.
It was as if we were on Earth.
Yeah, crime, poverty all still exists. Well, I know if you haven't read this book and you're listening to this, this probably all sounds super confusing right now, because it is. So to get a little into it, more plot or character driven?
Plot, 100%. It's about four different timelines and how they interweave together.
There is a specific character.
This one is hard. I see Caitlin's point where it all really happens because of one guy's choices. I think the part that's plot is it goes into a lot of how other characters are impacted by his choices.
It all comes down to the tree, the whoosh, and the violins. And
the tree, that's perfect. The tree, the whoosh, and the violins. That's what happens.
I guess I could see the argument for character, but I feel like it's all plot based because the plot interacts with the character that's specifically changing these things.
Well, it's hard because the plot is him, but he doesn't know. Yeah. That might even be
a
spoiler.
It's also hard because you don't know who the main character is till halfway through the book.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I guess that's why I'm so quick to say plot.
Yeah.
Right. And if you guys can't tell, because there's time travel, there's all these different timelines that eventually interact. And so when things happen is like not that easy to describe all the time. But yeah, I don't know. I think I would probably lean character.
I could go either way. It is a unique storyline, a unique premise. In that you don't know who the main character is until halfway through. And I don't want to say too much more now, but yeah, it's a unique situation.
Right.
Well, have you read any other books by the author?
I haven't.
I have. I read Station 11 for a book club I was in. Station 11 just got turned into a limited series. Wildly popular. I was hesitant to pick up a second book by the author, but I think the reason I didn't love Station 11, like, it was fine, but she has this weird fascination with pandemics, and Station 11 was about, like, a pandemic that decimated 90% of the population and how the world was happening afterwards, and I read it, like, September-ish, I think, August, September 2021. I was having some serious like PTSD reading the book. I was like, why did we pick this? So, Caitlin, if you're listening, I still don't forgive you for that one. But so I was hesitant to pick up this one. And I knew there was a little bit of a like pandemic undercurrent in this one too. But I would say I like this better than Station 11, which I feel like most of her fans will like crucify me for. But
because I've heard everything about Station 11.
I was about to say, we should have mentioned earlier that this is pandemic fiction, but in this book, I appreciated that it was very far in the background, and that made it sort of palatable to me, because I still really don't like pandemic fiction. But this book, it's so low-key that it didn't bother me.
It's part of the reason why I can't give it 4 stars, is because the pandemic, because it's multiple pandemic fiction. Like, there's a pandemic on a pandemic on a pandemic, and I'm like...
Well, I mean, in the timeline of man, there's always a pandemic.
I know, but like the...
Right, you didn't have to write about them.
I don't know, and we'll get into the question of is it too soon and pandemic literature in our more spoiler section. But yeah, I don't love that component, personally.
Yeah, I think I would have a different perspective on Station 11 had I not read it mid-lockdown. Like, we were just... We were meeting in the children's section of the public library, sitting 6 feet apart, wearing masks. Like, we were still very much in this thing when I read it. So I think I'd have it like now. I like definitely have a different appreciation reading this book, like, because it's kind of like, yeah, this pandemic happened, and that's kind of where we're living is. Yeah, this happened is happening. I don't know.
So what about the pacing? How quickly did you guys get through it? It's pretty short.
I got through it in 2 nights. So I read it when I got home from work. I read 60% the first night and 40% the second night. So it's a very quick book. And I think it made me invested in wanting to read more. Once I hit that 60% mark, I was just tired. So it's a quick read.
I'd echo that. I think it took me 3 days to read it. I think actually I read like the first 10 pages and put it down and was like, fuck my life. I can't believe I have to read this book. It's going to be a one star. But after you get through the first part, it picks up a lot.
Yeah, I read it in 3 days. The beginning was a slog. It was a lot.
I love how much but we then, all hated it.
Yeah, but get then once you get it. Halfway, it starts to like snowball downhill and you're like, wait, what's happening? And it's all coming together and then you don't want to put it down. So I'm like, I don't know how to say what pacing it was, because I feel like the beginning is really slow, but the rest of it is like pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you watch a TV or movie about the book?
I think it'd make a good movie.
Yeah, I would go more towards movie than limited series like Station 11 was.
Yeah, me too. I would watch it in a movie and I'd be curious to see how they pull it off, because I think it would be interesting to translate to movie, but I think it could work.
And I think it's actually in talks. Both her Sea of Tranquility and The Glass Hotel. I think HBO has also picked those up, is the rumor online. And a lot of people I know who have read several of her books really love The Glass Hotel, which I have not read yet.
Yeah, but it says the team behind Station 11 is adapting The Glass Hotel and The Sea of Tranquility. So, Paramount TV Studios, it has optioned both of those. So they own the rights to them. That doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be produced, but I think they're thinking limited series again, which I think this is a better movie, but that's a personal opinion.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll see.
All right. Do we want to give it our busy girl rating?
Ooh, wait, hold on. The Glass Hotel is about characters in Sea of Tranquility.
Wait, what?
What? I did not know that.
The Glass Hotel is a story of crisis and survival, greed and guilt, love and delusion. In it, Jonathan Alicatis's billion-dollar business is really nothing more than a game of smoke and mirrors. When his scheme collapses, it obliterates countless fortunes and devastates lives. Vincent, a bartender at the Hotel Cayette who has been posing as Jonathan's wife, walks away into the night.
Holy shit. He posed as his wife? Like, she wasn't actually his wife?
I don't know. I'm just reading the... I don't know what's happening. Maybe all of hers tie together.
I would totally read The Glass Hotel.
Because Vince was so curious I was about.
Yeah, that whole storyline I thought was one of the strongest and most interesting. And so I would totally read a book about it.
Years later, a victim of the fraud is hired to investigate a strange occurrence. A woman has seemingly vanished from the deck of a container ship between ports of call.
Is she still alive? Ooh.
Because the whole time I was like, ooh, she mysteriously vanished. I was wondering if she was going to come back in some way. And I guess she comes back in a different book.
Yeah, now I need to go back and think about how Station 11 is likely connected also.
I feel like this needs to be more well known. Like, we need to...
I mean, I'm sure people who have read The Glass Hotel know this, but...
Like, better marketing. Come on.
All right, so this is a universe, so buckle up. There's a universe of shows coming.
Okay. Well, now can I get your busy girl rating?
I'd probably give it a 4. It's not for everyone because it's a lot of perspective changes. It's sci-fi, but it's a really quick read and I probably would recommend it. I don't know if I would totally give it the 5 though for Busy Girls.
I'm going to go 3 just because it is so hard to get into, but it picks up speed. I just feel like it's kind of hard to pick up and put down because of all the jumping between timelines. I feel like if I left a lot of space between reads, I would get confused.
Yeah, I was going to stick with my 4, maybe do a 4.5 for my busy girl rating. I just blew through it and I thought it was really interesting. I think it's short enough that even if you don't normally love sci-fi, you can read it and it's sort of in between genres. So I think that that makes it more palatable to everyone. The one thing that I dock it for is the slow beginning. So.
All right. Well, none of this has made sense to anyone who hasn't read the book. So let's get to the spoiler alerts.
Yeah, people should read the book before they listen.
Yeah, this is another one that, I mean, it's a mystery. It's a mystery. And so you just ruin it if you listen to the spoilers.
Another busy girl's book. Another time jumping, narrator changing book. So what did y'all think of these time jumps? What did you think of the separate narrators? Did the author execute it well? And I guess we could also go into, obviously, one narrator pissed us off more than others, and it was the reason why we couldn't get into the book. So, Edwin, how'd y'all feel?
The worst perspective, most boring perspective, the worst one to start the book in. Nothing about him was important or made any sense or mattered, and I hated it. All the other perspective changes I actually liked, and I liked how it created this mystery about who this man is. I love that he ended up being the main character and you didn't really know that that was going to happen. I liked that sort of whole mystery part of it. But Edwin was a miss for me. I was like, absolutely not.
Well, because this is the scene setting of the book, and it's this privileged white boy in early 1900s who's been kicked out of his England home and now has to travel the world with all this money, and he can just do like lounge around and paint.
Yeah, he doesn't have to have a fucking job. I was like, you couldn't choose a less sympathetic narrator.
Yeah, and he's just like, my life's so hard. And I'm like, no, your life is so privileged and easy. Like, all you're doing is traveling to Canada, and you're like, my exile. I'm like, shove it, like, stop. And then we don't get into that mystery person until few pages in, because it's just setting up this like weird narrator.
I do like, though, it's like a ladder. You climb up, you come back down, and on your way up you're getting more pieces of the puzzle, and on the way down you're putting them all together, and it goes like up in the timeline, down in the timeline. And I loved that setup. I thought it was so unique. You had all the pieces, you just didn't know how to put them together. I will say, she does a similar time jumping, narrator jumping thing in Station 11 with way more characters, and I hated that. Like, that was my main issue with her other book, is like too many narrators, and I'm not into it. This one, I did not mind it as much. Like you said, Edwin kind of sucks, but the others I felt like I was pretty interested in.
I do too. I love the way you describe it as a ladder and the sort of picking up the pieces and then putting them back together on the way down. That's exactly how I felt in my reading experience, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought she executed it very well to do narrators and time jumping, because I think it's an overplayed trope at this point, just judging by our reading experience.
Quick interjection, though. This is a time travel book. So this is the first book where I will say the time jumps genuinely make sense.
Agreed.
Yes, they actually needed time jumps in this book, unlike many of the others we've read.
Yes, because these characters live hundreds of years apart.
Yeah. Right, but in the first half, you're like, why? What? Why do these connect other than the stupid tree violin whoosh thing? I don't understand. And then you get to like the middle and you're like, oh, it's this dude. Okay. Yeah.
And I think that's so, and the reason why I can't give it really a 4 stars or a 5 stars is it, because that first part so relies on interesting narrators, because you don't understand the context of the story, it falls flat on some of the narration. Because I did love the second narrator as well, but there were points where I was like, okay, like, I'm a little confused, like, she's falling a little flat for me, like, I need some pickup moments. But like Edwin just fell completely flat for me. So you need those very interesting characters so you can pick up these ladder rungs. And then when you come back down, it makes sense, but you do need something to entice you to move along.
For me, I think I was so swept away by the mystery created. This, like, especially at the very end of the first part where, the main character, Gaspari, who we find out later is the person who it was, is running away. It created this like deep-seated feeling of dread, because I was so scared for these characters and what was actually going on. And then when he shows up in the second story, I had it again, and I was just waiting to see what this man was going to do. And like, I was just so pulled in by that feeling, and I felt so invested in figuring out, if he was a good guy or a bad guy, why he is having all these mysterious circumstances that seem really insidious. And so.
And then you have the under the bridge thing and you're like, what? And then it clicked for me right before it was revealed. I was like, oh no. Like it was so like perfectly timed. I feel like where I feel like a lot of authors show their hands way too soon. Mm-hmm. I really had to like keep reading to know what was going to happen.
I guess maybe I had a different reading experience because I kind of predicted that to happen. Like right when we were introduced to him, I was like, oh, okay. So he's going to get screwed over by this super top secret organization and be framed for murder. And that's why he showed up under the mirror. I actually predicted that. So maybe that's why I had a different reading experience.
I did not predict that. I'm a master predictor. And
yeah, that took me a hot second to realize. And then they were talking about punishing him by framing for crimes. I was like, oh my God, the bridge.
Yeah.
But it took me way longer.
No, I'm with you. Introduced.
As soon as he was introduced, and maybe that's just me being predictive and like, I don't know how I predicted it, but I totally saw it coming. And maybe that's just my own fault for like predicting it for myself. So I wasn't quite as like tense as you were, Casey. Like I didn't feel that as much throughout the novel because I guess I predicted part of it.
I do want to point out, side note, this is a book I put on our list and Casey liked it better than me and I could not feel more proud.
Yeah, I liked it the most.
I know.
Good.
So it was a good book. I'm feeling really vindicated right now.
Like my critiques, it was still a good book. Like 3 stars for me or 3.5 stars is more accurate, is a good book. Like I liked it. I just like.
Oh, it was crazy unique. Crazy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know what that reviewer was talking about or referencing to me. Crazy unique.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it got so many points from me. It was really that I thought it was unique. And I didn't expect it. I know Catherine over here is figuring it out, but.
I waffled between a 3 or a 4. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we've already mentioned there's 4 main perspectives. Edwin, who we hate. Then Mirella, Gaspari, and Olive. Was there one that you guys liked the most?
I freaking loved Olive.
Olive.
She's just like a boss lady who just goes around preaching theory.
Yeah, she's like, oh, look, another beige room. Life goes on. I don't know. I just,
yeah,
it was so normal.
Yeah, she's so realistic in her. Like, oh yeah, like I'm just going to another conference on Earth again and again, going from city to city. But then she's like dropping bombs on these like theories of like, you're not important. Everyone thinks it's the end of the world. Pandemics are really scary. Like, and she's just like the theology queen. Like, it's just so good.
Also, I feel like the embodiment of Emily St. John Mandel. I feel like she almost wrote herself into the story a little with her expertise on pandemics and writing this book about a pandemic inside a book about several pandemics. I don't know. I was like, mind blown.
Yeah, definitely. I also did like the like slight tinge of irony, how she, though she made her whole life about pandemics and her literature about pandemics, she was, you know, supposed to be killed by a pandemic because she wasn't tuned in enough to the pandemic, which I think is also just so realistic. Now that we have all literally been through one, we can all probably also say, yeah, I wasn't really paying attention or taking it as seriously when I probably should have been because I didn't really get it. I didn't really know. And I didn't really want to believe that our whole world was going to come to a halt.
Right. I feel like we're all right there. And also like, when she got home and started like stripping off her clothes to like burn them or put them down the garbage disposal or whatever, I was like, oh my God, that was me when I was going to the grocery stores for the first couple months. Like I would come home and change like because I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, you were like wiping off your grocery bags, like washing all your clothes, taking a shower. I was like, yeah, washing your mask.
That's probably like the one scene that gave me a bit of anxiety because like. That was a little close to home.
Oh, for me, it was the kids getting pulled out of school.
Yep.
I did so much reporting about COVID in schools and masking in schools and kids getting COVID that it was like I was getting just like PTSD about all the parents deciding to pull their kids out of school. Like it was too close.
Oh, no, it was the whole, like, I was so, that was the one part I was, like, really tense about. I was like, Olive can't die. Like, you cannot kill off this character. Like, please, for the love of God, do not kill off this character. And I'm so glad that they didn't. But then her coming home and, like, staying home in this virtual experience, I was like, okay, I need a second. And that's when I, like, had to stop for the night, because I was like, oh, Lord, like, this is too close to home. Like, this is my experience. Like, it's so real, despite, like, the futuristic, like, I can just, like, virtually, like, VR headset zoom into meetings and stuff and lectures. But, like, no, like, it was very realistic. And
speaking of pandemics, one pops up in each of the timelines. So you've got smallpox in Edwin's because they like are on the coast and don't see any natives. You've got Morella's like between H1N1 and COVID-19. Like they reference COVID-19 coming up. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Olive, of course, who has this pandemic, which was a strain of something. I don't remember.
I think it was SARS. It was SARS something.
Oh, it was Ebola. What? No. Or, I don't know. Ebola is mentioned at 1.2. There's a lot. And it's all like this underlying theme of pandemics, but doesn't really super play into the book. It's super weird. But what did you think?
That's the one thing. Okay, I understood it and I liked it more than any other pandemic fiction I've read. I still probably would have liked the book more if it hadn't been there. I just personally feel like I'm still too close. It's a little too personal and I don't really want to read about that yet.
And for context, this came out in 2022, so this was written for people living in the COVID-19 era.
Well, because obviously she knew about COVID-19 because she mentions it in the book,
right? But so she sat at home during lockdown and wrote this book.
Yes, indeed.
She had a way better lockdown than I did. I was not that productive.
No.
I also don't think I could have coped with my feelings enough to produce that, so good for her.
The only pandemic adjacent thing I really liked was Olive's section, because then she dissected how pandemics work and like the human nature of being, there's a hubris in human nature of like, oh, like a pandemic's not gonna like smite me or whatever it is. So she like keeps continuing on, even though she knows in the back of her mind, oh, this thing in New Zealand is kind of concerning and I'm traveling around Earth right now in the midst of probably an outbreak of another pandemic, and she knows it and she studied this. And so that was the one that I thought was interesting. The rest of them I kind of felt was like a little pointless, a little useless, and it felt like a little triggering a bit. So I don't know. I it's too close to home for me just because it's only a couple of years out. Maybe yeah. I'll have a different opinion in a few years.
I also liked how her storyline introduced the concept of people are always in each generation, in each pandemic, in each iteration of populating the earth, are like the world is ending. But if you look at it in the bigger timeline, the world is always ending. So I thought that was an interesting concept to introduce, sort of optimistic, sort of not. But like, it's not the end of the world. It's always the end of the world.
Yes. Also, I did like that too. This is not that, but it just made me think of it. I really liked the way Gaspari was connected to Olive. I think that was a really good trigger point to kind of go then back down the ladder and you understand why he can't let her die. And so I found that so interesting and unexpected.
And then the girl living in her house.
It
was so interconnected. I was just like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, characters I did not expect to get pulled back. I was like, oh my God, we're here.
Yeah, it was all, that was when I really loved the book, was that inflection point where Gaspari interviews her and tells her, you should go home, and essentially like saves her from death. And she realizes it. And then she has this like very much so internal conflict of like, oh my God, I was supposed to die during this pandemic. And like, I'm so thankful because I'm with my kid. And even though life is hard, we're here. And then like everything cascades down from there. And then you see like Gaspari's devolving into like who
a good person.
A good person, but it's like, he loses a lot of autonomy because he goes against a very powerful organization.
Right. And also, okay, I wanted to talk about this too, and I'm just gonna, we're in the perfect segue for it, so we're just gonna do it. Gaspar as a main character was interesting because none of us listed him as our favorite character. He was not a totally likable main character, but I think that you like him more as it goes along because he develops that backbone. At first, he's sort of this just like ho-hum guy. He's more like Edwin, where you're like, what's your deal? Like, he's kind of a loser and doesn't really know what he's doing. But he gets that agency as he goes along and ends up saving people and paying the price for it. So he becomes, yeah. How do you feel about that?
I like that he was very, like, he had nothing going for him. And that was kind of the reason he chose to be a time traveler. He's like, I don't care for anyone or anything. Sure, send me in there. And then he like discovers, wait a second, I do care for people and I do care for good outcomes for people. And it's kind of fun to watch him realize that. But like, he's kind of an anti-hero and you kind of love him for it because he was just like a dude who wore sunglasses and stood in a hotel all night. And then he's like saving people.
Yeah, I never hated him, but like he definitely wasn't super interesting until you really got into it. But I thought it was interesting how he got into the Time Institute and all of this, because like there were so many women in his life that were saying this is a very dangerous institute. And if you cross them, you're going to get screwed over. And even his future wife told him that, his sister told him that, who was even part of the Time Institute. So that should have been so many red flags going off. And he's like, nah, it'll be fine. I'll just do 5 years of training. I can shut off my human emotion side. And I'm glad he didn't, because then he saves all of life. And that's like the morality issue. And I think it's him as a character is like such a good theme of like the morality and like, would you do the same thing as him? Like, there's so many interesting thoughts that come from his actions and his, like, it's just a cool character to do that with.
Yeah, and he's not a hero. Like, nothing about him is heroic, but he makes one decision that is heroic, and that sort of triggers everything else, which is so interesting.
And like, for some reason, all this sci-fi stuff is far more believable than the one unbelievable point I found was he sits down in an interview with all of them and was like, so if a time traveler showed up and told you to go home, would you do it? And she was like, yep, I'm out. I was like, are people raised on moon colonies more like gullible? Like, I don't know. Like, I've probably been like, what are you talking about, weirdo?
I guess I didn't think of it that way because she'd already been feeling a little bit of that like internal warning sign with the whole pandemic coming. And like, he was already such a weird dude. And like, he was named kind of the same name as a character in her book. And you're kind of like, she's even thinking like, that's a really unique name. I thought I came up with it. And so there was a bunch of like internal warning bells. It's just her trusting her own gut. So I could see the believability there.
That's how I felt about it. He also really played off of that experience she had in the air terminal where she knew something weird happened and she couldn't explain it. And I think having that experience made her more willing to listen because, I mean, he just like, I don't want to say he took advantage of that experience, but he used that as an example of how to kind of gain her trust and like connect with her in a way that would make her believe him.
Side note, did you foresee her publisher being a time traveler?
No.
I was like, hold up, what?
That was surprising. No.
Yeah. I was like, I trusted you.
She showed up and was like, I'm going to get you, Gaspry. And I was like, what?
Yeah, that was anyway. Shocking. No way anyone could have predicted that.
Yeah, that was awesome. Okay. So not only does the book address pandemics and end of the world stuff, it addresses simulation theory, which is the theory that we're all just living in someone else's like computer or something. And I'm sure like that's definitely come up in, you know, what is it, like the Truman Show or whatever? I don't remember what the movie
Matrix
is,
but the Truman Show, yeah,
right. So like it comes up, but in this book it kind of ends up being true, I think is what it landed on. I don't know, still wishy-washy, but
yeah,
it was not a glitch true, in the matrix. Maybe
true. Yeah, I really thought I would hate it because things like this make me very existential and I don't like it. It makes me feel uncomfortable. And so I normally just avoid reading books that tackle this kind of subject matter. But, you know, I think she pulled it off. It was very gray area about whether or not the reality in the book is the Matrix, and there's sort of evidence that it is, and there's evidence that it's not, and Gaspari ends up accidentally fucking with the Matrix, or just time travel reality. And, you know, I found it kind of interesting. I think we all kind of mentioned that the ending was a little rushed, and I think that the reason it felt rushed to me is I don't think she completely explained it and, like, tied off the circle specifically with the simulation theory, but I still kind of liked it.
She was like, Gaspari was here, here, and here in different timelines. And I was like, how did that make it glitch? I don't know. That was the part that was confusing for me. And the way I want to describe it is in my head, I felt like, you know, when a mirror looks at a mirror and it's just infinite mirrors. Mm-hmm. That's what my head felt like trying to grasp that specific, like, little description. But that was the only thing I feel like that was, like you said, kind of hard to get.
Yeah, because the way I thought about it was like, if you talk to yourself, it like punches a little hole in time because you can't be in the same place twice. And so it was like things falling through this little hole that they accidentally created.
Is there three times or four times? Because he was in the woods too, twice or whatever.
But I mean, like, what triggered it was him interviewing himself. And so it caused this, like, what the fuck in time.
Also, like, he swapped his face and became the violinist. I was like, what?
Yeah. Like, no one, I did not predict that at all. That's the part I didn't predict. The ending itself, I did not predict. From what I took about it is I agree with Casey. Like, I don't love those, like, existential, like, simulation matrix crises. I didn't love The Matrix, the movie. And I know every guy on the planet is going to yell at me for that, but I didn't love it. I didn't think it was, that's not something I'm interested in.
I'll raise you one. I've never seen it.
Okay. There we go.
Me either. I haven't
fair
either.
Enough. I mean, a guy forced me to watch it, so it makes sense. And so at first I was a little hesitant on it, but I think she does it a good job because I don't think she finalizes the question of like, oh, it's a simulation. It's more of like, he's in four places at once. And therefore time is literally collapsing in on itself there because it's like, no one should be in four places at once. So that's maybe not a simulation, more of like wormhole level physics.
Yeah.
So I think you can make both arguments.
Right. I like how the whole time you're like, why do we care about the freaking tree whoosh violin thing? And then you're like, oh,
yes.
Nope, we do care.
I literally had that exact thought. And I was like, now it's making sense.
Yep.
Tree whoosh violin was all Gaspari. And I was like, he's the violinist. Like, why did he get facial surgery? I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
Side note, I kind of loved that he ended up living in Oklahoma in this just like off the grid community of lost time travelers. I was like, okay, but that's kind of dope. Like, I love the idea of that place existing. And it also, yes, it would totally be in Oklahoma. Like,
also, kind of like this existential thinking thing again. I don't know if you guys caught this. It was like a cycle, like him time traveling to here and here and exploring this caused this. So he time traveled to explore this and it caused this. And I was like, my head hurts. But also then they went to Oklahoma City. I was like, thank you. That was so chill. He's just on the farm now with his dog.
All right. It's like that classic time travel mind fuck where it's like, if you go back in time and kill your parents, now you're not born. So you can't kill your parents. So it's like, can that even happen? It's like, I kind of like that this book played with it. And, you know, I think it's hard to totally pull it off because there is a little bit of hesitation from me still where I'm like, okay, but the glitch is what caused him to investigate the glitch. So how did the glitch happen? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't right.
totally It makes you think the timelines are like already set and just like each timeline yeah. is going to do. Yeah, it's too much to think about. I just liked the time traveling cat he acquired from his sister.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, I picture him whooshing by right now. And I was like, that's the funniest thing I've ever read.
That was one of my favorite just small details in the whole book. Also, yeah. I loved his sister as a character. His sister was a badass, like, honestly made the book happen. He fucked up and like got lost and understand stuff, and she saved him and fixed everything.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have done any of that had she not been like, I think there's a glitch in the Matrix. And he was like, cool, I'll help you.
Yeah, also exactly. true. But I loved the cat. The idea that she just like saves this cat who is a time traveler is just so cute.
And he's like, I'm in this period between when he was alive and when he comes to me, and he's just whooshing by. It was just so funny.
It was very funny.
I was kind of sad he had to leave the cat behind at that point. Like,
and I loved that that was one thing he said. Like, he knows he's about to get just like, you know, caught by the time police. And he's like, hey, can you watch my cat?
Right. Yeah. He's in prison thinking about the cat. He's getting arrested thinking about the cat.
He's got
his only friend in the world. It was so sweet.
Yeah.
No, it was such a sweet moment. But I will say, like, that what we're talking about, the ending was like 20 pages. And I was like, this needs to be like more thought out and longer, because I'm
confused. It was a little rushed, but I also didn't. I've seen worse. You know what I mean? Like,
I
was okay with it.
That's how I felt. So I was like, not perfect, but I'm happy.
I guess that's why I gave it a 3, is because I'm not happy with it. And it's not perfect. And I've seen worse, but I'm like, could be longer.
I was also sad that he ended up with his wife, but he knew when his wife was going to die and of what, because his older self had told him, younger self, and you're in the freaking loop again. And he already like knew how much time he had left with her. And that was sad.
That made me sad too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of Gaspari's questionable choices, what would you have done if you were this time traveler and you were investigating things, but you knew all these people could die, but maybe you could change their fate? What would you do?
I think I'd be tempted, but I'm such a rule follower. I probably would have just been like, peace. Here's how the timeline works. Like, realistically, I probably wouldn't have made the good choice because I'm a rule follower and I would have done what I'm told.
I would never have done what Gaspari did. Not because I'm a rule follower, but because I don't want to get in trouble with the time police. Like, those people were scary.
Right, I would have done the follow the rules.
I would have done the same thing his sister did, which is just get jaded and refuse to do it anymore. Like, I would be depressed. I would feel bad that I didn't save people, and I would quit. Like,
yep. Yeah, I would love to think that I would save Olive. I don't really care about Edwin. I would love to think that I would save her, but I probably wouldn't, because I'd be too afraid of the repercussions. I also probably would never have joined the Time Institute, because that seems like way, way too much to handle and like too much repercussions for your actions. That's just a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gave Edwin a whole, 24 hours or whatever? I was like, wow, that was depressing too. Wow.
I was like, of course that little loser would die anyway. He's so lame.
Oh, of an epic, there was another pandemic. What about, so I keep bringing up tree whoosh violin. The music of the violin and kind of art in general, especially in Mirella's story, comes into play. It's a sci-fi book. What did you think about the incorporation of art?
I like the incorporation of art. You can definitely tell it's a book written by someone who's more art-minded than science-minded, which I think made it more enjoyable for me. I don't really like the books that are more science-oriented, because a lot of them don't have the same like balance of character that I really makes the book worth reading for me. So I thought it was good.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked, like, reiterating what Casey said, like, I really liked the art and how, like, Olive's book brought them back there to investigate how what she experienced in Oklahoma City and how this like violin music video played into them coming back as well. and like learning the stories of each person, how they connect to those things. Once I got it, I got it. And I thought that was so interesting of a way to see this like simulation glitch or matrix glitch or just time messing with itself. And I think it's better than just like, here's the quantum theory of E equals MC squared of how time travel works. It's more of a realistic or more of a, because I mean, time travel is like, it's a theory at this point. We don't have like a basis in reality. So you can kind of play with it what you will.
Yeah. Is going off that point. True. But going off that point really quick, I also really liked that even the scientists in the book didn't totally understand it. I think in some science fiction, they try to invent too much theory and explain too much, when in reality, it's more realistic to just have scientists be like, look, we're investigating it, we're experimenting with it, but we don't understand. Because there's so many things in our real life science that's like that, where like we're trying to figure it out, but we don't know yet. And I don't like it when science fiction books are like, yeah, this is how blah, 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 and time travel works, and it makes sense. And I'm like, it really doesn't, but thank you.
I also, your explanation, Catherine, made me think, like, when each of these characters experienced something they couldn't explain, did they turn to equations? No. They wrote a letter, wrote a book, brother wrote a song. You know, like, they used art to express intangible things, which was really interesting. And the violin, you know, like, it all came together. And it was a sci-fi book where they used art.
Snaps. We love it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you have it. No. I have a fun question to end.
Yay. On. Okay.
If given the opportunity, would you move to a moon colony?
No.
Absolutely.
Even the
not.
Way they were described, I was like, this is just knockoff Earth. Like, I wouldn't do it. They all like said the air was more fresh feeling on Earth, and you know, the sky and the atmosphere were actually calibrated to what humans have evolved to live in. And so a lot of the moon colonies just seemed like a struggle to recreate habitability, which makes sense, but why would you struggle to recreate habitability in moon suburbia when you could just be on Earth?
Well, overpopulation, that's why. But
well, some people have to leave, but I'm saying if I got a choice.
I think I agree. Like, Earth's too cool. Also, like, they were talking about, you kind of pictured, oh, there's a moon colony out on like one of Jupiter's moons. And then at the very end, she's like, yeah, I didn't like living underground. And you're like, oh, that one was underground? Hell no.
Yep.
Yeah. It's all like Earth knockoff. Like, it's very much so not what you would expect. And it's all trying to simulate what Earth already has. And I'm afraid of heights, and I don't love the idea of space. And like, people always ask the question of like, if you knew the Earth was ending, would you like go and help colonize Mars? And I say, no, nope. I just let the asteroid hit me and die, because I don't want to go into space. That's an unknown I don't want to go into.
We had this discussion at work when they were sending William Shatner into space. Do you remember this?
Yes.
And my boss was really trying to prod me, like, you really wouldn't go. I was like, nope, kill me now. Like, not going. And he was so confused. I was like, I have no desire to go to space ever. Humans, we're supposed to be on the ground. Let me stay here.
And then he asked me too. And I said the exact same thing, where I was like, absolutely not. No, kill me.
I forgot about that until just now. Yeah. Also, all I could think of while you were saying it's like Earth replicas is I was thinking of the TikTok. I was like, Earth dupe? I hate myself for that.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, well, I feel like we have to end on Earth dupe. So there you have it. This has been our discussion. Do you guys have recommendations?
Obviously, you could read Station 11. But if you're jumping into the world of sci-fi, I don't read a ton of sci-fi, but maybe my favorite book of all time, Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. He wrote The Martian, which is a movie. Project Hail Mary is going to be a movie, and it's like a pretty thick sci-fi book, but I devoured it. Like, it has a lot of like high level sciencey explanation stuff, but it's also just so like funny and heartwarming. And I don't know, if you want to get into sci-fi, highly recommend.
So Ender's Game was my recommendation. It's now a movie, but it was originally a book. And it's the story of these, like, some of them are kids, some of them are teenagers, and they're basically in space school, and they're being trained to be in, like, the space military, and it's sort of this, like, futuristic, post-apocalyptic Earth. But it's very, like, you're not exactly sure what reality is. There's twists. And so it's kind of the same, like, what's going on, what's reality vibe as this, and also science fiction. So it's my recommendation.
Ooh, I have one, actually. So it's not really Earth-based, or it's not really outer space-based. It's very Earth-based. But I think Casey has mentioned this book before, but The Power by Naomi Alderman, it also has this like time going past and some time jump elements to it. And it's about if women in the world got this power suddenly and how that would affect the planet as a whole, like this power of electricity and electrocution, and how like global civilizations will interact with it. That's probably the most recent sci-fi book I've read. And I think that has kind of some similar vibes with the idea of like, this is pandemic, but this is more of like, if something happened to people and how that would change civilization. So it's like that sociological questions as well.
Yeah, good recommendation. Well, thanks for tuning in to our discussion. We hope you enjoyed, but we want to hear from you, even if you didn't. Did you think all our takes on this book were bad? Did you agree with all of them? Either way, give us a 5-star review and tune in for more.
Yep, you know where to find us, at Busy Girls Pod. If you know, we've been diving into a few more genres recently. If there's a genre we haven't covered yet that you want to see, please do let us know.
Yeah, and with that, I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening, and when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.